Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
Mexico, we've had very good talks with them, and this is retaliatory. This is retaliatory to a certain extent. Millions of people flowed into our country through Mexico and Canada, and we're not going to allow that.
President Donald Trump imposes sweeping tariffs on the three largest trading partners of the United States, Mexico, Canada, and China. Global stocks are tumbling. Then the staff of USAID, the U.S. Agency for International Development, is told to stay home. This comes after tech billionaire Elon Musk says Trump has agreed to shut USAID down.
And USAID is a ball of worms. Mm-hmm. There is no apple. And when there is no apple, you've just got to basically get rid of the whole thing.
We'll look at the impact of Musk's move with former USAID staffer Jeremy Conondyke, president of Refugees International. And as Elon Musk and his so-called Department of Government Efficiency gets access to classified details by taking over the State Department, the Treasury Department, we'll speak with longtime Democratic strategist Waleed Shaheed, who says Elon Musk is staging a coup, and with Lindsay Owens of Groundwork Collaborative, who says there are several reasons Musk wants to control Treasury payments. None of them are good. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Global stocks are tumbling after President Donald Trump imposed 25% tariffs on most imports from Canada and Mexico and 10% on goods from China. The White House said the tariffs are needed to hold the three countries, quote, accountable to their promises of halting illegal immigration and stopping poisonous fentanyl and other drugs from flowing into our country, unquote. Trump's also threatening new tariffs on the European Union. Economists have widely criticized the tariffs, which are expected to raise consumer prices. The Wall Street Journal published an editorial headlined, "The Dumbest Trade War in History." Mexico and Canada responded by issuing retaliatory tariffs on U.S. goods. This is Mexican President Claudia Sheinbaum.
Mexico no quiere confrontación.
Mexico does not want confrontation. We start from the collaboration between neighboring countries. Mexico not only does not want fentanyl to reach the United States, but we do not want it to reach anywhere. Therefore, if the United States wants to fight criminal groups and wants us to do it jointly, we must work in an integral way.
We'll speak with Lori Wallach after headlines. The future of USAID, the U.S. Agency for International Development, is in doubt after a dramatic weekend. The agency's website has been dark since Saturday. Workers have been told not to come to work today at the agency's headquarters. On Saturday, USAID's director of security and his deputy were placed on leave after they attempted to block Elon Musk's Department of Government Efficiency from accessing USAID's classified systems. New York Congressmember Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez wrote, quote, "This is a five-alarm fire. The people elected Donald Trump to be president, not Elon Musk. Having an unelected billionaire with his own foreign debts and motives raiding U.S. classified information is a grave threat to national security. This should not be a partisan issue," AOC said. On Sunday, Musk said, quote, "USAID is a criminal organization. It's time for it to die." Musk also said Trump agrees that, quote, "we should shut it down." Trump weighed in by claiming the aid agency is run by a bunch of radical lunatics, unquote. Doctors Without Borders warns the dismantling of the U.S. humanitarian aid system will cause a, quote, "unmitigated humanitarian disaster affecting millions of the world's most vulnerable people." unquote. We'll have more on this story later in the broadcast. The top-ranking career U.S. Treasury Department official has been forced out of the agency after he resisted a demand by Elon Musk and his associates at Doge to gain access to the government's vast payment system, which disperses trillions of dollars in federal payments each year. Trump's new Treasury Secretary, Scott Bessent, ended up giving Musk access to the system, which includes sensitive information about taxpayers, Social Security recipients, and government contractors. Musk is also accused of waging a takeover at the Office of Personnel Management, where career civil servants have been locked out of computer systems. The Trump administration's continuing purges of federal workers across numerous other agencies. On Friday, the Justice Department fired at least 30 federal prosecutors who worked on January 6 criminal cases. Meanwhile, thousands of FBI agents have been asked to fill out a questionnaire by today detailing their role in probing the Capitol insurrection. The Trump administration's also fired Rohit Chopra, the director of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Meanwhile, the Education Department has placed on leave at least 55 workers who'd attended diversity trainings during the first Trump administration. President Trump has reiterated his threat to retake the Panama Canal hours after U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio visited Panama on his first foreign trip in his new post. According to the State Department, Rubio demanded, quote, immediate changes in Panama to reduce China's influence in the country, including at the canal. Panama's president, Jose Raul Mulino, spoke on Sunday.
The sovereignty of Panama is not up for debate. That is very important. There is no doubt that the canal is operated by our country, and it will continue to be so.
President Trump's threatened to cut off funding to South Africa, the home country of Elon Musk. In a post online, Trump wrote, quote, South Africa is confiscating land and treating certain classes of people very badly, in all caps, the very badly. Trump was referring to a land reform law in South Africa where the country's white minority still owns the vast majority of farmland 30 years after the end of apartheid rule. South Africa's Minister of Mineral and Petroleum Resources, Wede Mantashe, responded to Trump's threat earlier today.
You passed an exploration act, therefore Trump will withhold funding to South Africa. And I said, let's not immobilize Africa. Let's withhold minerals to U.S. That is it. If they don't give us money, let's not give them minerals.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has landed in Washington, D.C. to meet with President Trump. It's Netanyahu's first trip to the United States since the International Criminal Court issued an arrest warrant for him in November for crimes against humanity and war crimes in Gaza. Netanyahu's trip comes just days after Hamas released three more hostages held in Gaza in exchange for 183 Palestinians jailed by Israel. The Palestinian Prisoners Society said many of the released Palestinians showed signs of torture and starvation. Meanwhile, Arab foreign ministers have formally rejected calls by Trump to transfer Palestinians in Gaza to Egypt and Jordan. In a joint statement, the foreign ministers wrote, quote, we affirm our rejection of any attempts to compromise Palestinians' inalienable rights, whether through settlement activities or evictions or annex of land or through vacating the land from its owners, unquote. Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas has called for an emergency UN Security Council meeting to discuss Israel's escalating attacks on Jenin in the occupied West Bank. On Saturday, Israeli forces blew up an entire residential block of 23 homes in the Jenin refugee camp. Israel's offensive has killed more than 50 Palestinians, displaced more than 15,000. On Thursday, Palestine's Prime Minister Mohammed Mustafa said Israel's attacks on the West Bank are a, quote, systematic effort to destroy the foundations of the Palestinian state, unquote. In Sudan, An attack Saturday by the Rapid Support Forces on an open market in the city of Omdurman killed at least 54 people and wounded more than 150 others. Sudan's doctors' syndicate said most of the victims were women and children, and that one mortar shell landed just yards away from Al-Noor Hospital. The hospital is suffering a major staffing shortage as nearly 2 years of civil war in Sudan has nearly decimated the health system. In the Democratic Republic of the Congo, at least 773 people were killed over the past week after rebels seized the eastern city of Goma. Another 3,000 people have been wounded in Goma, according to Congo's health ministry. Local health officials say morgues are filled beyond capacity and hospitals are overwhelmed. This is Abdou Hamen Sidibe, a surgeon with the Red Cross in Goma.
Habitué à avoir des blessures par balle, c'est des blessures entrées-sorties.
We are generally used to treating gunshot wounds. These are entry-exit wounds that reach an organ or a limb. But in recent days, we have received many injuries, not only from bullets, because these are civilians who do not wear bulletproof vests. As a result, we have seen many abdominal injuries. In addition to that, we have received injuries caused by explosive devices. The use of explosives in a populated area has resulted in many injuries. These are complex wounds. The medical care is very difficult and complicated.
Aid groups warn Goma's population of more than 2 million people is at risk of catastrophic humanitarian consequences. There have also been widespread reports of rape by armed groups and against women and girls. The DRC has called for an arms embargo against Rwanda over its backing of the M23 fighters and for Rwanda to withdraw its troops from the region. The DRC is home to vast reserves of metals and rare minerals, which Rwanda, the U.S., China, Europe, and Uganda have all exploited at the expense of the Congolese people. U.S. Navy and Air Force warplanes carried out airstrikes on northern Somalia Saturday, targeting the Islamic State. It was one of the first major U.S. military operations since Trump took office. The U.S. also bombed northwest Syria on Thursday. The Trump administration's preparing to end TPS, that's temporary protected status, for over 300,000 Venezuelans living in the United States as Trump escalates his crackdown on immigrants. The affected individuals were granted TPS status in 2023 and received an 18-month extension by the Biden administration. But the order seeks to end their protections just 60 days after the termination notice is published, a move lawyers say is plainly illegal. Meanwhile, Venezuela's reportedly agreed to accept deportation flights from the U.S. after talks with Trump envoy Richard Grenell, who met with the Venezuelan president Nicolas Maduro in Caracas on Friday. Grenell returned to the U.S. from Caracas with six Americans who'd been jailed in Venezuela. In more immigration news, the Trump administration seeking to access a database maintained by the Office of Refugee Resettlement with information on hundreds of thousands of unaccompanied immigrant children. Rights advocates warn Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, could use the data to further its crackdown, separating more families and causing more harm to the children. Meanwhile, Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth is visiting troops on the militarized southern border today. He posted ahead of his trip, quote, POTUS wants 100% operational control of the border and we will deliver border security as national security, unquote. Major demonstrations have taken place across the United States and cities in recent days to protest the assault on immigrant communities. In Los Angeles, thousands of protesters rallied into the night Sunday, defying a heavy police presence. A group of demonstrators shut down the 101 freeway in downtown L.A. In Atlanta, thousands marched along Buford Highway on Saturday after ICE announced targeted operations in the city. Here in New York, the NYU Langone Health Hospital system has canceled appointments for some of its young transgender patients following Trump's executive order that aims to cut off federal support for hospitals that provide gender-affirming care. Hospitals in Colorado, Virginia, and Washington, D.C. have also started canceling gender-affirming care for youth, including prescriptions and refills. But some doctors are standing up for their young patients. Dr. Jeffrey Birnbaum, a pediatrician at University Hospital of Brooklyn, has told his patients, quote, I'm willing to go to jail to continue to provide your care, unquote. In Washington, D.C., hundreds marched to Children's National Hospital in solidarity with trans patients who lost their care. The New York Times is reporting more than 8,000 government web pages across more than a dozen agencies have been taken down since Friday. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has scrubbed pages containing health information related to the LGBTQ care and to HIV. The State Department has deleted references to transgender travelers on its advisory page. The department has also stopped using the LGBTQI+ acronym. Pages now just say LGB to remove references to trans and intersex people. Louisiana has indicted a New York doctor for prescribing abortion pills to a Louisiana patient online. An arrest warrant has been issued for Dr. Margaret Carpenter, as well as the mother of the patient, who was a minor, on a felony charge of criminal abortion by means of abortion-inducing drugs. Under Louisiana's abortion ban, Dr. Carpenter could face a 15-year prison sentence, $200,000 in fines, and loss of her medical license. New York Governor Kathy Hochul vowed to uphold New York's shield laws as she issued this video response.
I will never, under any circumstances, turn this doctor over to the state of Louisiana under any extradition request.
And the Democratic National Committee on Saturday elected moderate political insider Ken Martin as its chair, despite calls from voters for Democrats to urgently switch gears and respond to working people's needs following the party's crushing defeat in November. 24-year-old gun control activist and survivor of the Parkland massacre, David Hogg, was elected to serve as one of the DNC's vice chairs, become the first Gen Z DNC member to hold the position. Activists with the group Climate Defiance disrupted events at the Democratic Convention to demand a clean break between Democrats and the fossil fuel industry. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We begin today's show with President Donald Trump's move to impose sweeping tariffs on Mexico, Canada, and China, the three largest trading partners of the United States. Global stocks are tumbling after Trump imposed 25% tariffs on most imports from the U.S.'s allies, Canada and Mexico, and 10% on goods from China. Energy resources from Canada will have a lower 10% tariff. In a statement, the White House claimed that tariffs are needed to hold the three countries accountable to their promises of halting illegal immigration and stopping poisonous fentanyl and other drugs from flowing into our country, unquote. Trump is also threatening new tariffs on the European Union. On Sunday, Trump addressed reporters outside Joint Base Andrews.
Mexico, we've had very good talks with them, and this is retaliatory. This is retaliatory to a certain extent. Millions of people flowed into our country through Mexico and Canada, and we're not going to allow that.
Economists on the left and right have widely criticized Trump's move, which is expected to raise consumer prices. The extremely conservative editorial page of the Wall Street Journal's headline, "The Dumbest Trade War in History." The National Association of Manufacturers said they'll ultimately, quote, bear the brunt of these tariffs, undermining our ability to sell our products at a competitive price and putting American jobs at risk, unquote. But Trump defends the tariffs, saying he's fulfilling his campaign promise. He was questioned by reporters last week.
You promised Americans to try to reduce costs, and so many of the products would be tariffed when they come into the country. The outgoing country is not paying the tariff. The buyers in the United States pay that, and then that's passed on to consumers in most instances.
Sometimes.
How would you expect to have prices come down if you have such a broad plan for tariffs? And what do you say to the voters who want to see you reduce everyday costs?
Well, let me just tell you that I got elected for a lot of reasons. Number one was the border. Number two was inflation, because I had almost no inflation. And yet I charged hundreds of billions of dollars of tariffs to countries And think of it, I had almost no inflation and I took in $600 million of money from other countries. And tariffs don't cause inflation, they cause success. Cause big success. So we're going to have great success. There could be some temporary short-term disruption, and people will understand that.
Meanwhile, Mexico and Canada responded to Trump's tariffs by issuing retaliatory tariffs on U.S. goods. This is Mexican President Claudia Sheinbaum.
Mexico no quiere confrontación.
Mexico does not want confrontation. We start from the collaboration between neighboring countries. Mexico not only does not want fentanyl to reach the United States, but we do not want it to reach anywhere. Therefore, if the United States wants to fight criminal groups and wants us to do it jointly, we must work in an integral way.
And this was the response Saturday from Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau to Trump's new tariffs.
I want to speak directly to Americans, our closest friends and neighbors. This is a choice that, yes, will harm Canadians, but beyond that, it will have real consequences for you, the American people. As I have consistently said, tariffs against Canada will put your jobs at risk, potentially shutting down American auto assembly plants and other manufacturing facilities. They will raise costs for you, including food at the grocery store, gas at the pump. They will impede your access to an affordable supply of vital goods crucial for U.S. security, such as nickel, potash, uranium, steel, and aluminum. They will violate the free trade agreement that the President and I, along with our Mexican partner, negotiated and signed a few years ago.
For more, we're joined in Washington, D.C. by Lori Wallach, director of the Rethink Trade Program at American Economic Liberties Project, board member of Citizens Trade Campaign, the U.S. National Trade Justice Coalition of unions and environmental, consumer, faith, family, farm, and other groups. Lori, welcome back to Democracy Now! Respond to what's supposedly going to be enacted tomorrow. Now, let's be clear. That's Tuesday. Trudeau said he's tried to reach out to the president. He won't return his calls. The president says he's going to speak to both presidents, Mexico and Canadian prime minister and presidents today. What's going on here?
So tariffs can be a very effective tool to achieve lots of goals. If you're for enforceable labor standards and trade agreements to raise wages, you're for tariffs. If you are for border carbon adjustment to promote low carbon production, you're for tariffs. Tariffs are part of the formula of the tools you use to try and reestablish our ability to make things here that we need and create good jobs for the two-thirds of Americans who don't have a college degree, so making solar panels, medicine, EVs. But slapping on tariffs on Mexico and Canada, ostensibly about migration and drug trafficking, is not just ineffective. I mean, it's like trying to do surgery with a saxophone instead of a scalpel, but also is going to be damaging. It's going to cause enormous disruption, but without any of the outcomes and goals that one might actually want to use a tariff to achieve, to help working people or build our resilience.
What is Trump trying to accomplish here? Some have said, I mean, on one hand, he's been threatening China with tariffs, but he's doing, he said, 10% on China. And with his allies, Mexico and Canada, 25%. Some suggest that maybe the fact that Elon Musk has a factory in Shanghai brought down the tariffs on China. Your thoughts?
The reason probably for the 10% is that there are already around 20% tariffs on two-thirds of all of our trade with China, still in place from 2018 during the first Trump term. And then President Biden raised tariffs on EVs, on solar, and other things to 100% with respect to China. So this is 10% on top of the existing 20%. So actually now everything will have at least 10%, but a lot of stuff will have 30% or 100%. Coming from China. But, you know, here is the question. Again, tariffs, legitimate tool, but what is the purpose here? if you're trying to fix the redone NAFTA, the so-called U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement, which was Trump's redo of NAFTA, then there's a built-in six-year renegotiation that basically starts now. If you can't fix it, you get rid of the whole thing. But there's a process to do that. You know, USMCA was supposed to bring down the NAFTA trade deficit and end job offshoring. Instead, since 2020, the trade deficit's doubled and offshoring's continued. So that Trump trade negotiation clearly needs some fixing. But there's a way to do that. It's not the tariffs. Or if you're trying to generally use tariffs to try and rebalance our chronic trade imbalance, which has promoted in deindustrialization and income inequality, well, then you use a variety of tools together, including to make sure that the companies that have had record profits from this old system pay for the transition by making it easier to organize unions and doing anti-price gouging policies so companies don't use their monopoly power to raise prices. Even if you're trying to stop the flow of fentanyl, bizarrely, if you actually read the executive order, there's a loophole. The president has authority called the de minimis loophole we've talked about before. The president has existing authority to close, and they still allow informal entries of these 4 million packages a day in which the fentanyl is buried, which he could have fixed if he really was focusing on drugs. So it is a very mysterious and potentially damaging state of affairs.
And in the case of fentanyl, I think in 2024, there were like 43 pounds of fentanyl that was seized at the American-Canadian border. I think more went the other way. I also want to turn to the UAW president, Sean Fain, on tariffs. He wrote on social media, the UAW supports aggressive tariff action to protect American manufacturing jobs as a good first step to undoing decades of anti-worker trade policy. We do not support using factory workers as pawns in a fight over immigration or drug policy, he said. Lori Wallach, your response.
So I think UAW President Sean Fain had it exactly right. And actually, in my long tweet thread about these tariffs, I cited him because, again, as I started out, tariffs are a really powerful tool. And when used particularly in combination with things like investment policies to try and actually spur domestic production capacity, new factories, creating demand for American-made, high-wage, high-environmental standard goods, by putting together a package of policies and keeping them in place, not just random tariff here, could go away tomorrow, you actually incentivize the kind of investment you could rebalance. We certainly don't want to hold on to the old devastating neoliberal trade agenda. But the random tariffs on Mexico and Canada, compared to a strategic use of tariffs with a mix of other tools, aren't going to get you the outcome you want, even on the fentanyl. Again, closing the de minimis loophole, a thing a president has authority to do, stopping the ability of 4 million packages, mainly e-commerce packages, mainly from China, to come in uninspected without the normal customs information. So they closed half of this executive order. They said that stuff can't slip in without paying tariffs anymore. Okay. But then they allow the stuff to come in uninspected. And so ostensibly, if you're trying to stop fentanyl, probably more important than the pay the tariff is the don't sneak in the stuff uninspected. But they didn't do that. This is something they could actually fix tomorrow if they wanted to. The bigger use of trade policies to try and fix our mess, what they did or may or may not impose tonight at midnight, doesn't fit into an agenda of making things better for working people or the planet, not here, not anywhere.
And let's talk about immigrants. AP cites a new study by Warwick McKibben and Marcus Noland of the Peterson Institute for International Economics. The study found, quote, for Mexico, a 25% tariff would be catastrophic. Moreover, the economic decline caused by the tariff could increase the incentive for Mexican immigrants to cross the border into the U.S., directly contradicting another Trump administration priority. Lori Wallach.
Well, I mean, this is, again, the perverse irony. There was a Trump trade plan issued on January 20th that laid out in an orderly fashion a rational sense of how to do a new trade agenda. This is unrelated to that because, for instance, one of the things that spurred the original wave of migration from Mexico to the United States was NAFTA. the North American Free Trade Agreement, which displaced millions of campesino peasant families off of their rural livelihoods by dumping subsidized U.S. corn into Mexico and suddenly destroying the livelihoods of millions of people who first went to the border, to the low-wage maquiladora plants, couldn't make a living there, couldn't feed your family on $5 a day, and then used migration to try and come to make a living.